Welcome, everyone, to a special episode of the Search Off the Record podcast. Our plan for this series is to talk a bit about what's happening at Google Search, how things work behind the scenes, and who knows, maybe have some fun along the way. This episode is a bit special, as you'll soon see, or rather hear. My name is John Mueller. I'm a search advocate on the search relations team here at Google in Switzerland. I'm joined for this episode by Martin and Gary, also both on the search relations team. As I mentioned, today's episode is a bit special. It's a recording from the Search Central Live event that took place at the end of February 2021. As the name suggests, for Search Central Live, we wanted to do as much as possible live, including an episode of this podcast. Live recordings are always a bit special. No matter how much you prepare, unexpected things can happen, so this was definitely quite an exciting experiment. On top of that, we aim to have Search Central Live take place at a time that's more convenient for folks in the Asian Pacific region, which was the middle of the night for us. Thankfully, Gary and Martin are no strangers to both jet lag and recordings, so I think it all worked out nicely in the end. For this episode, instead of the usual back and forth between us, we decided to try to answer some of the questions that we received from the audience during the course of the event. I hope the selection of questions, the answers, and the discussions are interesting to you. So, without further ado, let's switch over to the live session. So I found a question.
Awesome.
I'd love to hear your takes on it. What would you say is priority number one when launching a new site on a new domain for a local business?
I would say good content.
So local business, like a bakery?
Yeah, maybe definitely say where you're located, what your opening hours are, what's on offer. These kind of things, I guess, make a lot of sense. Gary, anything from your end?
Yeah, that's an awesome question, actually. I don't think that we go too much into detail about these kind of things, and perhaps we should, because when you're launching a new site, then very often it's kind of hard to come up with the content. I have a friend, she lives in Austin and she's a dog instructor, and they launched a new website and she had ideas about what she could put on the website, but when I looked at the website, then to me it felt very minimal or not focused. And of course, the problem is that I can't tell her anything because, like, we are friends and then it's like kind of weird. But eventually, someone pointed out to her that the content is very narrow and very minimal or too minimal. And it was kind of like, it was also not very precise. Like, she was not describing well what the business was about or where it was exactly or how someone can get the service. So those are very important in my opinion. Like, tell people what you are doing, exactly what you are doing, what you are capable of, and what kind of services you offer, and also where you operate. Because, like, yeah, she's in Austin, Texas, but based on the website, it could have been anywhere in the continental US. So perhaps a narrower, I mean, if you pinpoint your service area, that would be useful.
And also what service you're offering and what products you're having in your, if it's a shop like that sells products. Because I have seen so many of that, oh, I wonder if this place has X. And then it's like, our family business has been in operation since 1959. And we have since served our local community. And I'm like, served how? With what?
Yeah. That's like the recipe sites. My grandma was baking this during the Second World War, and it was the best thing ever. And the soldiers were coming, and they were eating, and they were drinking, and then it just goes on and on and on and on and on. And you're like, but where's the damn cookie recipe?
And the best is when that happens in the middle of the recipe, like you have your hands full of stuff and you're like in the kitchen and just like trying to figure out what's next, and then you're like basically scrolling with your elbow or something. It's like, what is happening here? Because I don't care about the history of your local mill or something.
I mean, by then your phone probably locked itself, so you also have to unlock it somehow. which is very hard with the elbow.
Face ID, my friend.
Oh.
Which I actually, ironically, do not have enabled.
Going back to the question, like, for local businesses, I'm sorry, going back to the topic.
John is trying to keep us focused. That's a nice change.
So, yeah, I don't know. For local business, I think also everything around Google My Business is really useful because it kind of forces you to provide all of that metadata for your business, like your opening hours. It's like, give me times. Don't describe when your business is open. Give me a clear address, a name, a description of your services. I think you can also add products now. So all of that, I think, is super useful. And from an SEO point of view, the one thing that I think is also important is that you have the reasonable expectations. Like if you're starting off with a new business, you're not going to rank number one for bookstore in the US. It's like you have a small niche that you work on and you can grow out of that and grow a little bit larger over time. But you kind of need to kind of grow with the assumption that, first of all, you want people nearby to find you. And partially that's done by people who know your name, who can search for you directly, and partially people who just see you in maps and other kind of listings where they can find local businesses.
Also, think about whether you can adapt to the current situation or to the situation that's in your area and try to mention that on the website. Because, for example, I know that in Portland, there was this, I remember it because of the mention of the bookstore. There is this little bookstore that when this pandemic started, they started delivering books to the doorstep of the people. And then they could exchange the books for some like few cents. Well, probably not a few cents. Well, actually a few cents to another book. It was a used bookstore, so it was probably just a few cents. So when someone was finished with reading something, then they could just basically return the book and get a new one that they chose from the online inventory. And it got really famous locally in that area where they were delivering.
And I think that's also something that you can think about, which kind of almost goes into the area of link building. And Gary is going to give me that look, I'm sure.
I am already giving you the look.
Okay. But I mean, doing things that are kind of magical and kind of out of the ordinary, where people start writing about you.
Yeah.
Where local news sites, they mentioned like, oh, this company is doing something fantastic. Maybe, I don't know, on a radio even, where you don't really get a link, but you get mentioned and people can search for you and find you online because of that. So kind of taking a step out of the comfort zone and doing something that people like to see.
Right.
I think that's also really useful.
And that's also the way to compete with the bigger players in your area. Basically, if you can offer something that is more than they can offer because of their sheer size, for example, that can be super helpful for your own business.
Yeah. Cool. I found another question. Like, if you want one more.
Sure, go ahead.
How often are algorithms adjusted due to SEOs gaming the system?
More than five.
In my 10 years, I can recall about four or five times.
So every other year.
That were not specifically web spam algorithm changes.
But that is less often than I expected, to be honest.
I think sometimes the folks that work on the algorithms work to try to just make them work really well. And we get a lot of feedback from lots of places. And my guess is a lot of the SEO gaming type things are things that we try to catch normally already, right?
Right. Also, the thing is that we are not going after the SEOs. We are improving the quality of the results.
Yeah.
So if we see that there is a systemic problem with the results, then we are going to try to find the solution for that and improve the result quality. But we are not saying that, oh, the SEOs are again doing this and that, and we have to solve that. It's really just like, oh, the quality of the results is not that great in this particular vertical or whatever, so we should do something about it.
So you're saying if SEOs game the system and provide better sites, more relevant content, that would be fine?
That would be horrible. I strongly advise against that.
I see what you're doing.
Also, Someone in the community actually asked a question that I was recently confronted with as well. Oh, no, actually not recently. I was confronted with this like 2 years ago because it was an in-person event. But it feels recent because...
Everything is relative, Martin.
Exactly. Looking at the timescale of like the whole Earth, that's relatively recently, I would argue. And Evan is asking that specific question as well. And it's, how has PageRank changed over the years? And like...
I don't think that we want to talk about that.
No.
I mean...
But no. Let me rephrase the question a little bit into something that I think we have been talking about and that we could discuss a little, which is, are we still using PageRank the same way that we did in the beginning? Or has that changed? Or has it gone away? Or what is that? Are we doing something similar still? Or
so to answer exactly the question that you asked, we are still using it the same way.
Oh, okay. I see. Moving on.
I think you asked the wrong question, but okay.
I think I asked the wrong question. You're not giving me much here, but I guess that's okay. John, do you have follow-up questions or other questions?
How long is Google going to continue recommending dynamic rendering?
Yeah, Martin.
Oh my. Oh, come on. So...
It was submitted. Really?
It's a legitimate question. So first things first, dynamic rendering is when you are serving a pre-rendered non-JavaScript version of your page specifically to bots, including Googlebot and other bots, and like the full shebang with JavaScript and everything to users. Oftentimes that is followed up by is no cloaking, to which I say no, unless you're showing very different content intention-wise. We have been recommending it in 2018, I think, and maybe before that. We have stopped recommending it when the Evergreen Googlebot came out in May 2019. So we don't recommend it anymore. It doesn't say that it's going to go away, and Renditron is also probably going to stay supported for a while and maintained for a while going on. We don't really have any plans of deprecating that. It's just we think... it no longer is reasonable because it turns out that dynamic rendering requires a lot of tech changes in your infrastructure anyway. It might look like the simpler option if you compare it with server-side rendering or server-side rendering plus hydration, but in practice, it turns out to be more complicated in most cases. So we don't recommend it. You can still do it. We just think you should probably try to invest in server-side rendering instead. If you can't for some reason, or if you need a band-aid until you have server-side rendering implemented, it's still a viable solution, but I would consider it a mid to short-term solution.
How would you decide between leaving something client-side rendered and implementing server-side rendering? Is there like some simple guideline that you can tell people, or is it mostly, it's like, if you know what you're doing and you're already doing it, then that's good? What kind of tip?
Our CTO in the previous company once said to me, and that rang very true, and I just like the clarity of the sentence, don't fix what isn't broken. So most JavaScript frameworks come as client-side rendered out of the box. So if you use them, you very likely end up with a client-side rendered application. If your stuff gets indexed and can be crawled and indexed and rendered, then that's not an issue. Like, you shouldn't be trying to fix something that isn't broken. If you are seeing issues in terms of, let's say, for instance, conversion rate, because people are dropping out, because the site is flaky because of JavaScript, maybe server-side rendering is a good practice. If you see your site being really slow because the specific client-side rendering strategy isn't going to go so well with the amount of content you have, then maybe server-side rendering is a good strategy. In general, server-side rendering is usually making things more robust and faster for users. But that doesn't always have to be the case, and maybe you have lower hanging fruit elsewhere. So don't apply it as a fixing all solution. It's not a silver bullet. It's not going to take away all the problems. But if you see issues that stem from the fact that some content is for some reason inaccessible or really slow or hurts performance, and that comes specifically from running all the JavaScript in the browser, then yes, you can get rid of that or reduce the impact of that by using server-side rendering.
So cool. Yeah. And since you mentioned performance, would using client-side rendered or server-side rendered content affect things like Core Web Vitals, or is that kind of separate?
No. So the Core Web Vitals are trying to model and quantify the user experience of a page loading on the user's device. And it turns out that if you think about your content, you have HTML, you have CSS, you have JavaScript, you have images, maybe videos, maybe sound files. It turns out from all of these, the most expensive asset is not images, it's not video, it's not audio, it is JavaScript. And that's because the JavaScript has to be downloaded. That usually is relatively large. It can be multiple megabytes that you have to download before you actually get to even get closer to seeing the content. And then you have to execute, actually parse the JavaScript into a machine-readable format because it's human-readable and not necessarily machine-readable. It needs to be parsed into something that is, or translated into something that is machine-readable. And then it's being executed. And then if that execution triggers more network requests, you have to wait for those network requests, and then the content comes in. That is never going to be as fast as content coming in through HTML, and then immediately network requests happen for the images. And then immediately, if it's like progressive JPEGs, you can even start rendering and showing the image as it arrives from the network. You can't do that with JavaScript. JavaScript needs to be fully downloaded before it even is translated into machine code, and only then it can actually start doing stuff on your site. So the Core Web Vitals will very likely be affected by this, because the sheer fact that it takes so many extra steps to get to the content means that the largest contentful pain is going to happen later. The fact that every browser tab is basically doing one thing at a time and one thing at a time only means if it's executing JavaScript, it can't do anything else. As long as your JavaScript executes, you cannot scroll the page, you cannot type into input fields, you cannot click buttons. I mean, you can, it's just nothing happens. So the first input delay might also suffer. If JavaScript injects things or moves things around on the page, then also your visual stability might actually suffer. So you might see impact on all three of the Core Web Vital metrics.
Okay, so the short version is don't use JavaScript.
No, that's not the short version. Use it reasonably. It's saying like, oh, you can cut yourself with a knife. Don't use knives ever. Good luck. Good luck in the kitchen without a knife. If you're making soup, you'll probably get away with it. But if you're trying to like cut meat or something, how do you do that without a knife?
I become vegetarian. Yesterday, I made seitan.
Ooh.
It was great.
Wow.
I need to probably like ask for recipes then.
Be careful. Gary will start telling you about his grandmother.
She was a very interesting person.
You are a very interesting person. I'm sure the rest of your family is fantastically interesting as well.
Cool. Yeah, I don't know. It's like so many other questions are still here. Here's one. I don't know. Maybe this one works. What's the difference between the label penalty and basically a page not showing up at all because Google chooses to show another site with the same duplicate content?
Oh, my.
So basically, I don't know, a penalty, a manual action, or we just show a different site instead?
Well, a manual action, you get a manual action, or a site gets site or section of a site gets a manual action when they do something or they attempt to manipulate their rankings with something, like with links, with gibberish content, or I don't even know what. I'm not very versed in the web spam policies. While the ranking is more natural, I want to say, in that you have full control over what's happening there, at least in most of the cases. And it's not targeted. Manual actions are always targeted. Basically, you did something against our guidelines, or that was against our guidelines, and you are getting a manual action for that. While an algorithmic change is most likely trying to fix a systemic problem, and you just happen to have that problem, I guess, or contribute to that problem, but it's not targeted to your site.
Yeah. And I guess the situation where a different page is shown because it's exact duplicate content of the own page, then it's...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's like, that's not necessarily a spam thing. Like with products, for example, if different sites have this exact same product description, like we don't need to show all of the copies in the search results. And we tend to just pick one of them.
Yeah.
So it's not a sign that you're like a spammy site just because you're using products that other people are selling too.
And in most of the cases, also not very hard to fix, because if you add substantial or good quality content to your page, then it's very easy to break out of those dupe clusters and be featured on the page on your own, and then someone else will have the problem that you had. So go and fix it.
Yeah. I guess in both cases, you just go and fix it. It's like with manual actions, you get an email telling you to fix it, and the other one, you kind of figure out on your own. But yeah,
just go fix it.
Just go fix it.
It's as easy as that, isn't it?
Just go fix it. So I have another go fix it question. Is it better to keep AMP pages with issues or to remove the AMP pages completely?
Is this a trick question? I will shut up now.
I think Gary has opinions about AMP.
It's a wonderful question.
I don't know. From my point of view, it's like if you know your pages are broken, it's like fix them or remove them. It's not super complicated. I mean, I don't know what kind of issue it is, but if you know something is broken and you want to make sure that you're putting your best foot forward, then make sure you're putting something that works forward, right?
I think that makes sense. And if you want to reap the benefits of AMP, I'm pretty sure having a valid AMP page is the first step towards that. So you might get away with it working well enough to be considered as a page, but it's not going to get you much of AMP's benefits. So I would argue that, especially if you have a non-AMP version that is fine, then having a broken AMP version around is probably inviting more trouble than it's giving you any benefit. So yeah, I would probably remove a broken one or fix it.
I will give another example. Hreflang was... I'm related to Hreflang. It's very close to my heart for reasons.
I was about to say, like, you're related to Hreflang. Is it your brother or your sister or...
Oh, that's why it's rel Hreflang. Now I get it.
Yeah. Exactly. But they're the... How to put this nicely? There was this big company who at one point decided that they couldn't measure the benefit of Hreflang. So they decided to remove it from their sites. And their rankings tanked. It just like went away internationally. And suddenly it was very obvious that they need the Hreflang to rank well internationally. And same goes with AMP as well. If it benefits you and it's worth investing in fixing the issue, then yes, go ahead and fix it. But if the ROI is too low for your business, then you might as well just remove it. And I would say the same thing for Hreflang or any other technology that there's out there, because it's your business. You have to decide for yourself what benefits it and what doesn't. If Hreflang benefits your business or your business reaps the benefits of Hreflang, then good. If not, try removing it and see what happens, because you do need to invest in maintaining it.
And I think if you're just doing AMP for speed reasons and you have a really fast site otherwise, like just have one site and just focus on that instead of kind of trying to maintain both of them. Whereas if you, I don't know, have your AMP version set up in a way that it gets created automatically by a plugin, then maybe it's just a matter of updating the plugin and then suddenly everything works again.
Yeah.
I have a question that is maybe just like a yes or no thing, Gary. Is there value in having title tags that are longer than the displayable space in the search snippet?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
That's a nice one. That was easy. I'm shocked.
I like these kind of answers. Well, like if we can, we should do these more often.
Cool. And I don't know. Like lots of things still in the list. What does Google feel about PWAs to help improve user experience?
I will mute myself.
Oh, come on. That's because PWAs include service workers that are built with JavaScript, and Gary is so happy about JavaScript. I think in general, they are great. I use a bunch of them, actually. So I do use the Progressive Web app for Twitter, for instance. I have been using the YouTube one recently as well. because they just take less resources on my phone and they work pretty much just as well as native apps, at least on Android. I know that the integration on iOS, I think, is not as great. But for search specifically, it doesn't really matter, because as far as we can tell, it's just a website. And certain things like offline support, that's something that we don't really experience when we crawl or render the pages. So it doesn't really make a difference to us. But a well-built progressive web app usually is also a fast website. So a fast website, on the other hand, will have good metrics on the core web vitals, I would hope. And that is a good thing. And that is part of the upcoming page experience signal. So that'll definitely not be bad.
Yeah, I guess a PWA doesn't necessarily have to be completely JavaScript client-side rendered, right?
No, it does not have to be that, no.
Okay, yeah.
That's like orthogonal or independent concepts, right? You can take any website, you can make a static HTML page, add a pre-built service worker that allows to cache that so that it's offline capable, serve it over HTTPS and do like a few other things, like have a manifest file, which is a JSON file, again, no JavaScript. And then put all that together and you have a PWA, even if it's not really running any line of JavaScript besides the service worker. The only thing that you need JavaScript for is the service worker, and the service worker allows offline usage of that page. So it's a price I would be okay paying, I think. I know that Gary might think differently.
Sounds awful.
I knew it.
I mean, it sounds like something people should just be doing. Is that, like when you describe it like that, it feels like, oh, it just makes everything better, and you don't add a ton of JavaScript overhead.
I think he's just hiding something.
No.
He's good for you, PWAs. Okay,
PWAs, cool. Christine is asking if we can get a reason for the title tag length answer.
No.
Gary.
That was also easy.
Okay, I mean, I tried.
So the title length, that's an externally made up metric. And I think at one point we blurted out some number to say that, yeah, it should be like that, like this long, just shut up. That might not be true, actually. Maybe it was just wishful thinking.
If you blurted it out, it would probably be more than 7, or at least 7.
No, this was before that, before I came, or we came up with the 7.
Okay.
Yeah, number 6. So the reason why I try to steer people away from thinking about concrete numbers is not even about how we display titles, but rather how we construct our serving index and how we tokenize the page itself. And there's no, I mean, technically there's a limit, like how long can it be anything in the page, but it's not a small number. Like, it's not like 160 characters or whatever, or 220 or whatever. So try to keep it precise to the page, but I would not think too much about how long it is and whether it's long enough or way too long. Like, if it fills up your screen, then probably it's too long. But if it's just like one sentence that fits on one line or two lines, then it's like, you're not going to get the manual action for it.
Are you saying it's not the size that matters, but the technique? I'm so sorry. It's 2:28 in the morning, and I'm 12 years old.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. I should shave, then I actually look like it as well.
I remember that our ex-teammate, Maria, she was always saying that I'm like a six-year-old. Well, now we have a 12-year-old.
Yeah. So it's twice as good.
Good.
Fair. Do we want to take one more or do we want to wrap up?
Okay. I'm just like grabbing the first one that I have on my list here. In terms of page speed, is it better to exclude tracking code like Tag Manager? Is there a way to include it without affecting page speed?
No, that's not my question. I'm muting myself.
Okay. So, wow. I would say reduce the amount of requests that you need to make to load the critical content. I think doing like additional bits and pieces that are optional and that you consider as optional, and like if this code doesn't run, I'm kind of fine with it. I think for those things, Google Tag Manager is really useful. or other things, I'll try to like grab as much as possible into other resources. So either in your own JavaScript bundle, if it's a client-side rendered application, or into the initial HTML. We have been saying that, for instance, around structured data, you can use Google Tag Manager to inject structured data if that's the easiest and only option that you have available. If you can do it differently, then do it differently. And that is pretty much true for not just tracking and Google Tag Manager, but pretty much any third-party script, because any JavaScript holds the keys to your content on the page and also technically, potentially, the keys to your loading performance for your users. And you give that away to a third party, you need to trust them. Google Tag Manager, I'm sure the Google Tag Manager team is doing its best to make it lightweight and fast. That being said, at the same time, Google Ads, I know, is a big offender in terms of page speed. And that's something that we need to work on. No, I'm just being honest here. This is something that you can objectively observe out there and that we are being confronted with on a relatively frequent basis. But I think now that Core Web Vitals are so visible and so publicly discussed, all the teams have an incentive, including teams at Google, have an incentive to really look at the performance impact of the things that they build and improve that. And I think that's generally a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, use what you really need on your pages and focus on your priorities, I guess.
And there's one more post on the Core Web Vitals while we're at speed, and I'm guessing this might be one for you, John. On Core Web Vitals, it was reported that you need 3 greens in Google Search Console for Core Web Vitals, but there was some confusion if 3 greens were required for any boost with the Core Web Vitals or just for the potentially coming badge.
I don't think we have an answer for that yet.
Ah, dang.
I mean, we've been working on expanding the FAQ that we have in the forum for Core Web Vitals, and lots of questions are coming up. And I don't want to kind of detract from the FAQ by preempting anything there, but that's something that I believe will be covered there and a little bit clearer. So sweet. Should be fine.
So basically, just hang in there. It'll be fine.
Well, I don't know about it'll be fine, but it'll be clearer, hopefully. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. The optimist in me is coming through. Everything will be fine. Everything's awesome.
No, stop it.
Oh, come on.
It's too early, Martin. At most, we can do sea shanties. Right, Gary?
I'm not doing it.
Oh. Oh.
They sent us questions. It's fine.
That's fair.
Cool.
Excellent.
Shall we take a break here, Martin?
Yes, I think that's a good moment, yes.
Can I go to sleep now?
What do you think? What's the time?
The time is 2:33, so we can definitely take a break here.
All right.
Sayonara.
Cool, cool.
Arigato gozaimashita.
And that's it for this special episode. Thank you for joining us here, folks. If you're curious about the other parts of Search Central Live, the recordings are on our YouTube channel, so take a look there. We've been having fun with these podcast episodes, and I hope you, the listener, have found them both entertaining and insightful as well. At any rate, let us know how you're liking these and if there are topics that we should be including in one of the future episodes. And, of course, don't forget to like and subscribe. That's all for today. Thank you, and until next time. Bye, everyone.